Welcome to CWS, Christian Writing and Speaking. I'm your host, Jackie Wilson, and today's guest hails from Phenix City, Alabama. He is an entrepreneur, an author, a fashion designer, and an at-risk specialist. After facing what seemed insurmountable circumstances, he learned that there is purpose in our pain. Now he shares this message to empower both adults and children. He does this through keynote speaking, publications, radio, TV, and now CWS. This dedicated, funny, and determined father and soon-to-be husband simply wants people to see the unique plan God has for their lives. Because he knows we were created in the matchless image of God for greatness. Welcome to the show, Reginald Foreman.
Yay! Hi, Reginald.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you here because you just have an amazing story talking about how God turned your life around. And of course, we want to hear about that story.
Well, introduction was great. I started off in Chicago, Illinois, growing up in the projects. My mother, they say hurt people hurt other people. She was unstable in our life. So I kind of grew up shift from house to house, back and forth from Alabama to Chicago to Miami. I grew up in gangs, violence. My mother had a drug problem, ended up in prostitution. A lot of people have these stories that they come from hell, from insurmountable, you know, circumstances. You said mine was pretty deep. And in the midst of that, I ended up like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I moved to Miami, Florida. I didn't know that my father and my mother had an agreement that I would move to Miami from Chicago when I went to high school. So imagine me at 14 years old. If you remember, you started smelling yourself. You thought you were grown around that age. You couldn't tell you nothing. So at 14, coming from unstable household violence and fighting, I moved to Miami. My father was military. He was corporate America. My stepmother, quick joke inside about my stepmother. When I first talked to her on the phone, I thought she was white because she spoke so proper. So me coming from the hood, I wasn't used to hearing that. And my father had to tell me that correct English is not a race. So my mother is black. She was the daughter of Sheila, a model, very beautiful woman. So I moved into this whole different environment like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air they had. They made over $100,000 together, and that's in the 90s. You know, four cars. We had a pool. They had Christmas fund. They had a college fund. They had all kinds of savings. And I'm coming from this ghetto. So in that, I started doing what I knew how to do. I started hanging with the wrong crowd because I got bullied the first day of school, which five guys tried to jump me and take my money. So that pushed me back into the same reaction. And what happens in life, from a child, we can develop a chip on our shoulder. Yeah. And mine came from being bullied. So I said, there will be another day that somebody will bully me. And I started fighting back. And my father wanted to put me in private school, but I begged him not to because there wasn't going to be no girls. It was an all-boys school. And I said, no. So I ended up going to junior high, kind of middle neighborhood, and got into a lot of violence. And in the midst of that, growing up, the wrong tactics, found out that my father and my stepmother, I never seen them argue in front of me. So you got this picture perfect family. Good money, proper. My father was corporate America, she was. And they were having disagreements behind closed doors. Mm. I'm hanging in the streets, they're not getting along, they end up in a divorce. And I find out that my father had close friends that were Cubans and Colombians that were selling drugs. Mm. Nobody would ever believe this because my father was like the hope of the family. He used to, in college, he became Mr. Dictionary, reading and studying and to be great in life. And he had, and that's why they say, if you show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Mm. Oh, my father ended up, after their divorce, the next thing I know, my father is hanging with Cubans and Colombians. He started riding around in limos with two prostitutes in his limo, in a limousine. I can't make this up. Yes, my life story is being penned for Hollywood. But my father's riding around with two prostitutes. I started getting in more trouble, and I ended up working at a strip club that he shook hands with, and an older Cuban guy, and let me work there. So I'm maybe 18, 17 at that moment. And these women, it's a strip club, naked, coming in the back. I'm fixing their food. I'm amazed. They wouldn't let me go in the bar area because they didn't want to lose their license. And right. One day, coming back to the strip club, he told me, don't come. Somebody had ran the owner over, backed over him with the truck, and got out and shot him 9 times. So in that world, we call it a hit. And I was on my way to work. So this is kind of stuff I was growing up with. And I got deep in the streets. My father disappeared. The DEA was looking for him. And I ended up trying to take on the weight of a house on my own. Mm. And I tell people at 16, I had a way out. God always makes a way out. And sometimes we don't pay attention. At the age of 16, my aunt up in St. Louis, Missouri, told me I can come live with them. But when I say they cold you, Holy Ghost, no makeup, skirt down their ankles. I was like, I'm not moving up there with them. I ain't going to be able to date no girls. I ain't going to be able to listen to my rap music. I said, I'm going to stand on my own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. Going on 19, and I started doing robberies. So I was always hanging with the wrong kids, doing robberies for a year and a half. We doing robberies, robbing people. That's what I was doing. I was off the chain at 19. I ended up robbing a bank. Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine came to me by his brother who did some big-time robberies, and I was bold then, ended up robbing a bank. And I got illegally sentenced. What happened was the transcript said that I took my time and I robbed the people's personal product, their watch and their wallet, outside the bank in broad daylight. And then I ran into the bank to rob the bank. I'm like, come on, somebody on drugs or crackhead, whatever you want to say, would not do that. Somebody's going to see me robbing the people outside. They lied. I ran in the bank and I did take the man's wallet and the purse. I wanted everything because that's how bad I was doing. Trying to keep the house, the water was off. I was doing bad. And in the midst of this, I did reach out to certain relatives, and they didn't want to help me. So I said, I'm going to stand on my own 2 feet, even though I could have moved to St. Louis. Mm. And robbed the bank. I took their personal stuff. When I got to prison, like I said, the transcript said that I did it. So what they did was give me 9 years in state, 9.5 in federal prison. Mm. I never was supposed to touch state prison because I robbed the bank, and it was the bigger charge. So I should have just went straight to federal prison.
So what now was the transition for you? You went to prison. How long did you serve?
So when I went to prison, and I got to tell you, the legal sentence, they gave me 9.5, 9 years. The state prison was supposed to run concurrent with the federal, and it didn't. Mm. So they ended up giving me 18.5 years at 20 years old before my eyes for bank robbery and first charge. I get in there, I'm getting in the word, getting in prison. 4 years later, I went to appeal because a guy it was in prison was a jailhouse lawyer. He helped me. I get back in the courts for my appeal. I'm in there after 4 years. I get a letter from the federal prison. Mr. Foreman, your case is moot. You've lost your time. It's exasperated. So I was without a chance out. And this is how I saw the power of God. There's always a come to Jesus moment in your life. Mm. I'm going to the cell talking to my friend. I'm friending. Oh, they say I can't file because we call the federal prison the real gangsters. We, as they say in the streets, the alphabet boys. You can't buy a federal judge. I told him, man, I can't get out. They said my case is mute. I have 2 years to file. I didn't file. Now I'm stuck in federal prison. He said, now you're going to do this. You're going to see the hands of God. Now you're going to see his power because you have no way else out. Mm. And he was laughing and praising God. I'm like, what is you laughing and praising God for? Because he knew God was going to show up. I get in the courts and what the state judge who ran their time concurrent with federal, meaning I should have just had one sentence, said, somehow they didn't agree. What we're going to do is overturn your gun charge and bring it down to 3 years. I had 9 years, they just charged me for the gun, but I was 4 years over. So I could have went, so what I'm saying is they re-sentenced me from 9 to 3 years, I already did 4 years. I could have went straight home out of prison. Didn't happen, they ended up sending me to another state prison, I'm skipping parts. They sent me to a state prison, I'm sitting in there writing a lawyer, I'm writing a judge, everybody like, why am I here? Because in my mind, I have to go to federal prison to beat the federal prison. I'm still in state prison, that's been overturned. There's mm-hmm. a saying, while you're trying to figure it out, God has already worked it out.
Yeah.
3 months go by. I'm sitting in the classroom. The lady comes from R&D. That's receiving and delivery. They receive you and they deliver you out. They say, Mr. Foreman, we need you down in R&D. As I'm walking to the door, it was a young Haitian kid in there. He was wild. None of the older guys would deal with him. And he was like, hey, boy, today is your day. Things happen when it rains. It was pouring down rain outside. I said, what is that, some voodoo or something? What you mean things happen when it rains? So I go in there and I'm looking. I'm sitting at the computer and the lady's typing. She said, Mr. Foreman, you have immediate release. I'm like, okay, because I know I ain't supposed to be here. But the judge told me in the courtroom they have a detainer on you. The federal prison is coming to pick you up 4 months ago. So I'm sitting in the state prison waiting. I said, is there a hold on me in the computer? She said, no. I said, there's no detainer on me in the computer. She said, no. I said, I'm gonna shut up and ride this out. I get up, change clothes. They give you $100 when you get out of state prison. I walk to the front seat of the police car with the woman because the federal prison is known to let you get outside the building, swoop up and say, you got to serve a charge for us now. You're not going home. You'll leave state prison and they'll get you. Mm. Nothing happened. I got on the bus like, oh my God, I'm free. Federal prison never came and got. I got out of prison, moved to St. Louis, Missouri with my aunt, because I tell people, if you're coming from drugs, if you're coming from an abusive relationship, if you're coming from prison, you need accountability.
Yeah.
You need somebody to help you stay strong. I knew I didn't have no family. My dad was going to step, but if I stayed in Miami, Florida, where I was at, I was going back to prison because I didn't know what I was doing. Moved to St. Louis, they in church and they work. Went up there, dating the pastor's daughter. I was out 3 years. I was dating the pastor's daughter, about to be the deacon in the church. 4 days later, after 2004, 4 days after Valentine's Day, 6 a.m., it was the heaviest knock on the door. If you ever heard a U.S. Marshal serve a warrant, it'll wake up out of coma. I jump up, go downstairs. U.S. Marshals are standing at the door and said, Mr. Foreman, you are under arrest. We have a warrant for your arrest. They put me in a police car and said, you were let out of prison erroneously by mistake. After changing my life, working at Labor Ready Temp Service, I didn't even thinking about crime. Now, my pastor's daughter started having dreams that I went back to prison. I thought she was going crazy, but I ain't even thinking about crime. They take me back to prison. I'm sitting on the edge of the bed. I wasn't even mad at the government. I was mad at God. I said, God, are you an Indian giver? All is changing my life. I relocated, stay out of trouble. I'm dating the pastor's daughter. I'm about to be a deacon. And you took, I'd rather have judge and jury, what we see on the streets, take me on the glory than to put me back in there. A guy walked up to me, and I tell people, accept the help that God sends. A guy walked up to me. He was another jail. He was in a prison for a long time, but he was anointed. He was looking at me, speaking, encouraging me, giving me life. And I had a chance at that moment to say, I won't say the word, but Negro, I don't want to hear nothing else about God. But I just put my head down, and I was in tears and pain, and he began to encourage me. And I started occupying myself in prison. I got like 30-some certificates of and bettering myself, going to anger management. All I was voted most likely to succeed prison of the month. Yes, there is an award for that in prison. Because I tell people, while you're waiting for God, how are you showing him you're preparing for what you're praying for? God is preparing us for the blessing. Some of us can't handle it. We're not ready for the husband, the wife, or the business. I said, I'm going to start knowing I'm going home. Fast forward, the man started working on my case. 4 years later, I won my appeal. Because when I went back to prison, they wanted me to do the whole 9.5 years. They said, we didn't run out of time concurrent. I had to fight just to get the 4.5 I did. So I did 4.5 years, 3 years on the street, 4 more years. I did 8.5 years altogether.
Wow. But you said so much in your story. One of the things I love is that you realized that you couldn't go back to what you used to be. You couldn't go back to the same people. You couldn't go back to the same circumstances. And the Bible tells us we have to look forward. You know, our eyes should be on that prize. We have to look forward. Like, we're trying to win this race. But if you're looking back, and I talked to the kids about this, most likely you're going to trip over some type of obstacle. You're going to stumble. Something is going to happen. But it was so great that you made up in your mind and that you knew that you had to continue moving forward, and that for you to move forward, you needed that accountability. Unfortunately, of course, you have this situation, but I love what you're doing with it, because now you're saying God taught you in that time. There are all these things that you wanted, but sometimes we're not ready for it. And God has to prepare us a little bit more. And sometimes he has to get us by ourselves, and we can't dictate how he gets us by ourselves.
How he's gonna do it, that's right.
But I thank God for people who are encouragers, who were there for you to step in, even in that prison. Like you said, God is sending people. We just have to recognize that he is sending the people. And a lot of times the problem is that we do not recognize that he is sending people because we are so, you know, absorbed in what's going on with us. But one of the things I love that you said, and I stated in the introduction, is that our pain has a purpose. You know, we don't go through these things just for ourselves. And I want to hear a little bit more about after you came out, how did you see God directing you from there?
After I came out, the biggest thing, though, I have to backtrack where he said that to me, because people don't know that God speaks to them. When I had lost trial, I went to trial, I had cursed God out. I was in the cell, angry. Where were you when my mother beat me? Where were you when these guys were chasing me home from prison? Where were you when I was hungry? I had that moment where I was cursing, but I was saying, where the F were you? And I was going crazy in the cell, and I heard God say, I have a purpose for it all. So that's how that became my word to help other people. I had to learn, which is more in my story of divorce and losing a child and all that, that there's a purpose through it all. So after I came out, I knew that God had a purpose for me, but I yet was not ready to follow. I still was leading. So what people will do is say, God, this is the door. Come go with me. Open it. Instead of saying, God, is this the door? So I still was planning my life, but I just knew I wasn't going to be crying no more. I need to go to church. But I had not yet surrendered fully. I see so many Christians and believers who are saying they serve God, but they won't give him everything. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, I know I got to go to college. I got to do this. Because I read a book in prison by a guy named Chef Jeff. He's an ex-offender who sold big drugs in New York and ended up becoming a multimillionaire. And he had a federal record. So I knew with a federal record, I can be a chef. So I'm thinking I'm going to go to school because I knew I liked cooking, but then I found out I didn't love it. So I ended up going to school because my side of the family was the black sheep. Got in there, was like, I hate all this work. I didn't like doing so much schoolwork. And at the same time, my aunt had her own rules and was getting on my nerves. So I quit school, ended up working two jobs because I wanted to get my own place. Ended up at this job where they make t-shirts. So I'm working at this t-shirt shop, print shirts, and God spoke to me, or I did came to me. I was watching BET Rap Hip Hop Awards. And the rapper T-Pain comes up on the stage, he had his award. He said, I want to thank all my haters for this award. And a light bulb went off. I made a shirt called God Bless My Haters.
Wow.
My first shirt was God Made Me What Can Break Me. And God Bless My Haters. Man, I was selling those shirts, driving a beauty shops, barber salon, slinging the shirts. People would come up to me and say, oh, I just beat this divorce. I need that God Made Me What Can Break Me. Or I just beat cancer. I didn't know that the words meant so much. Mm-hmm. Then another girl came to me and said, I can't stand this girl on my job. I need that God Bless My Haters. I said, you do know it say God Bless My Haters. But I said, whatever you want to buy for, that's up to you. So I started making t-shirts, and that's when it was like, I'm going to be a fashion designer. Didn't know what I was doing. I was just hustling and ended up stopping for a year till God prophetically spoke to me into another church. If you keep God first, he's going to keep your business. I went into fashion design, made it on magazines, and I made it on fashion shows. I was doing good. I wanted to be the first faith-based Sean John Fubu, Tommy Hilfiger, Ralph Lauren, real fashion, and was doing good. And then God showed me, somebody came to me about writing a book. And I was like, I don't want to keep coming. One of my sisters in faith, I know here from God, but in my mind, what we do is rationalize. I'm like, God, I'll wait till I'm in Paris, I'm in all the big stores, then I'll write a book because I'll sell more books. Everybody don't know me yet. And I ran from God for 2 years, would not write a book. And God was trying to show me, know your story. I need you to, it's for ministry.
Yeah.
I was chasing success because I wanted to be wealthy because all the people that turned their back on me, family members, church members, I wanted to show them, look what you did. I had the wrong motive for my gifts. I'm going to say it again. Mm-hmm. A lot of us have gift come without repentance. We're talented, but we have the wrong motive, especially if God chose you for ministry. So mm-hmm. One day I'm speaking at Aeneas Williams Hall of Famer, ex-football player, has a church in St. Louis, 200 plus men. I'm speaking there. And after that, like 6 or 7 minutes, said, where's your book? The story is so big. Where's your book? This is my first book. Live Determined. Don't Let Your Struggles Bully Your Dreams. That was my first book. After I wrote the book, I was sending my testimony in the CBN 700 Club. It was taking a while because I get so many people. They finally answered me. And when the man come to my house to do the documentary, I asked him, well, you know, I was just talking about how they picked me and everything. He said, well, somebody sent your book. And I'm like, I didn't send my book in. Who did that? He said, because we were going to give you 5 minutes live interview in this studio. But when we saw how deep your story was, they said, you need your own trailer documentary. Yeah. I was like, wow. So that book got me on CBN. It got me on TBN and being obedient. So God began to show me. I was opening up testimonies for a Christian comedy show. Now, God knew my story. He had Christian comedy. He was doing good in St. Louis. He said, yo, tell him about 3 minutes of your show. I mean, your testimony. And I just knew how it impacted people because my product, I would have my own booth selling my fashion. I had God Made, Godly Image Apparel. People would come in and, oh, it's nice. But when I got through speaking and sharing my story, I would have two lines of people because people buy you.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell people, tell your story. You don't know, it, no matter how insurmountable or how small you think it is, you should tell your story. People, when I coach them, I counsel them, oh, I don't have nothing to say. Like, you don't have to be me to have a story. Somebody needs it. And so that's how God began to guide me into being a speaker, which I didn't really want to do that either, but I knew I have the gift of gab. So I went from just, he said, tell your testimony. I was just going to tell my testimony. I didn't have bullet points. I didn't have reasoning. And now as I help people how to start a business, how to know your why, keep your spiritual mental, I had to become a speaker because once I understood what God was showing me, he began to guide me. And how I knew, because how people would respond. People would be in tears when I got to speak. Like, man, how your mother's on drugs, you lost this, they legally sentenced you. One guy came up to me that was strong enough. He said, Reggie, I understand you've been successful. Black Enterprise nominated, you've been on all this. He said, but what I noticed that you're not bitter after a legal sentence. My grandmother died in prison. I had so much happen. And I said, because I really met Jesus. I didn't meet God in prison. I obeyed him there because he was calling me before. I said, I really had an encounter where it's not a jailhouse religion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just love it. And when you found that God was telling you, this is where I want to lead you. I think a lot of people will have a bitterness after they've gone through certain situations, you know, and it's like a thorn almost. And it just continues to stick you. And every little situation may seem to remind you of what you have been through. But when you obey God and he uses your testimony to touch other people's lives, what an amazing thing that would happen. And then, like you said, you were able to do twice as many sales just by being obedient to God. But when you were on your own trying to do things your way.
You just hit a key point. When we humble and surrender, I can't stress this enough. You get anything out of my testimony or interview, God healing first. Healing and surrendering will open many doors. It looks like you should got to go to school. I got to learn this degree. I got to learn. You do. You can't be so heavily minded. You don't have any skill set. But when you surrender to God, because why? If you look at every victory in the Bible, the battles God used when it was the battle of Gideon, when he's small, he said the ones that lap water like dogs against hundreds of thousands, he used 10,000 because he wanted the glory. Yeah. He must get the glory out of your story. That's why they get jobs and people get on TV and be like, man, I don't have a degree. They picked me because I trusted God. Again, not saying you shouldn't go to school or you shouldn't. Right. I had to learn business. I had to learn to do logos. But a lot of doors open out that I prayed, I'm telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your testimony. We definitely want to tell people how they can connect with you via social media.
Oh, man, you can catch me on reginaldforman.com and on Facebook is Reginald Forman God Made. Instagram is Reginald_Forman. And then, oh, man, I got to give you a little bit about Reggie the Lion. I talk so much, but Reggie the Lion is my faith-based affirmation toy. We're talking about building something as big as Mickey Mouse mixed with McGruff the Crown Dog. I just linked a deal with a television station that wants to put his cartoon out. You're talking about African-American ex-offender creating a toy line. A lot of people behind us for lack of time, but this is another thing. Reggie the Lion was birthed out of pain. I had twins with my ex-wife and we lost our daughter and God gave me the vision. So that's why I want to stress again, there's purpose in your pain. He showed me Mothers Against Drunk Driving, a woman who had birthed out a program after she lost her 13-year-old daughter to a drunk driver. And God gave me the whole vision of Reggie the Lion, which he speaks positive affirmations when you squeeze him. So you can find me again at reginaldforman.com and that's Reginald Forman God Made and Reginald_Forman on Instagram.
Yes, thank you for that. You all, he has said so much. And first of all, he just wants you to know that you are made for greatness. God didn't just put you here on earth to just be here on earth or to chase temporary things. He put you on this earth to glorify him. And you heard through his story how he was able to, and he is still glorifying God and how he will continue to do so in the future. So listen to that, people. Going back to the first segment of this interview, when he talked about not going back to those old things, it is so important to try to move forward past what's in your past to get what God has for you in the future. Like I said, so many nuggets of wisdom there. Before we leave, I just do want to give you the final word, Reginald, for the people. Just what is the last thing that you want to leave with them before we end this interview?
It's a two-part. Like they asked, what would I tell my younger self? Do not panic. Do not panic. Many times we panic, we make haste, and we make quick decisions. We're getting too far in front of God taking the steering wheel. Yeah. Do not panic and trust God. Other than that is, remember, no matter what you look like, what you've been through, look at your Oprahs, your Tyler Perrys, Reginald Foreman, you were created in God's image for greatness. If you think about it, I don't care if you got seven kids and they call you fat or whatever, ugly, whatever you want to think about, you're created in God's image. Once your mind shifts, then your situation shifts.
Amen to that, you all. Oh my gosh. Once your mind shifts, you will start shifting. Thank you so much, Reginald, for being a part of this interview. Like I said, so many great nuggets to share with the people. Nobody should walk away from hearing this interview and not take something with them for life. Mm-hmm. People, until our next episode, God bless.